Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests for both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You're welcome to make calls and to make comments and ask questions during the show. We suggest at the latter half of the show that you are welcome to make calls. There are also a number of services and resources available through Toward the Light, and we'd like to encourage you to help support this program by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For further information, please visit towardthelight.org. This week, I'm pleased to have the author of a book entitled Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. And it says revealing the mysteries of karma and rebirth. Welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. Richard Salva. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Juliet. How are you?
Oh, very well, thank you. It's so wonderful to have you with us this week, and I have really thoroughly enjoyed your book, and it, not the least of which is about reincarnation. And
yes.
So go ahead and tell us a bit about the book and actually what led you into it. I know you've got an extensive background in yoga and the study of reincarnation and so forth. So go ahead and tell us a bit about what led you to the writing of this book.
Yes, well, I first became interested in reincarnation when I got on the yoga path of self-realization as taught by Paramahansa Yogananda. He's fairly well known in New Age circles. He was the author of the spiritual classic Autobiography of a Yogi, and many people have seen his photograph because it's on the cover of the Sgt. Pepper album.
Right, too.
Yes. He and some of the other spiritual masters are on that album cover. So the Beatles and Elvis Presley and millions of people through the world have been moved by reading his autobiography, The Yogi.
But, myself included.
Yes. And so I've always believed in reincarnation during all these years. I've been following and teaching and practicing these yoga teachings for about 32 years. And during those years, I believed in reincarnation, but it was just an interesting concept, something fun to think about. And then I started to have more experiences that led me to really feel it as a reality in my own life. And about 10 years ago, I was on a plane flight going to the East Coast, and I was in between writing projects. And as I'm a minister as well as a yogi and so on, and an author and a spiritual person, so I thought I would pray for guidance on what to work on next. So I closed my eyes as I was seated in this airplane, and within less than a minute's time, the idea for this book came to me, and it was a very strong feeling of guidance. It wasn't a vague notion of any sort. And I recalled something that I had read many years ago, something that Yogananda himself had said. About 60 years ago or so, Yogananda said that Abraham Lincoln had been an advanced Himalayan yogi in a past life, and that he was reborn as Charles Lindbergh. Now, this when this thought came to me, I realized, you know, this is really quite a fascinating statement, and it would be really amazing to just go through the histories and just see what's there, see what can be unearthed as far as connections between the two men. At that time, I'd already known a great deal about what the Himalayan yogis practice because I practiced many of those teachings myself. So I could look for connections between the two men and the ancient spiritual science of yoga. And then I thought, you know, here are two men whose histories have been so deeply chronicled, who have, you know, dozens, even, I think in Lincoln's case, hundreds of books written about them. And it should be possible, if there are connections between the two men that can bear out what Yogananda had said, to find them. Now, I wasn't sure when I got started on this, how much I would find. I thought I might find a few interesting connections, maybe something worth publishing. But I was just blown away by the quality and quantity of connections that I discovered. Nearly 500 different connections and similarities and parallels between the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh. More than 200 connections between Abraham Lincoln and the ancient spiritual science of yoga, some of them really quite fascinating. And more than 100 between Charles Lindbergh and the path of yoga.
That is so interesting. And actually, I remember reading that quote somewhere. I don't know if it was an autobiography of a yogi or if I read it somewhere else, because I really do resonate with Yogananda a lot.
Yes,
and
yes.
When I was reading her book, I thought, oh, yes, goodness me, I have read that myself.
Yes, actually, that statement was first published in a book by a disciple of Yogananda. His name is Kriyananda. He wrote a book called The Path, Autobiography of a Western Yogi. And in that book, and most of the book is about Yogananda and things that he had said and taught and done. And it included a chapter on reincarnation, and that's where it was first published. But the thing about the connections that I discovered that was so amazing was that they span every aspect of human experience. You know, everything that defines an individual, you can find a connection between Lincoln and Lindbergh, whether it's physical traits or social habits, spiritual traits. Everything across the board that defines an individual, you can find a connection between Lincoln and Lindbergh.
Well, I really saw that in your book, and I thought it was so tremendous reading that. And there's a little quote here on the back of the book that says, "More mind-blowing revelation than the Da Vinci Code." And I said,
yes.
Wow.
Yes. Well, they tell you when you put a book out to put hyperbole in it somewhere, you know, on the back of it. You know, I think, you know, I stand by that statement. I mean, I read the Da Vinci Code, and it's very mind-blowing. And it's also about famous people in history. But when I think back as to how many connections there actually were in the book, you know, the book is a thriller. So a lot of it had to do with plot, you know, following the plot and, you know, keeping you on your toes from wanting to open the next chapter. And so I think there were fewer than 50 connections in there, maybe even more like 30. And in my book, I've got 10 times that many. And these connections are available for people to look up in their own public libraries. They don't have to take my word for it, which is true for many of the reincarnation books out there.
Well, you also provide a lot of good indexing and references and stuff like that. So you've really done a tremendous job. I thoroughly enjoyed reading the book, and it really, really makes a lot of sense to me. Plus, I was able to learn a lot about these two men as a result of reading your book. So,
yes, it's fun to have a reincarnation study that also goes into parts of history that affect us all and makes you wonder about these other dimensions that happen when these historic events occur. You know, things that have to do with reincarnation, things that have to do with the spiritual world, I think are very much tied into these really major happenings that happen in the world itself. For Lincoln and Lindbergh, you've got the Civil War, you've got Emancipation Proclamation, you've got the first solo flight across the Atlantic, and so on. But yes, I was actually fascinated working on it.
Oh, I can imagine. And not being American myself, I was trying to figure out what Emancipation Proclamation is, other than being a good tongue twister.
Yeah.
Didn't that have to do with the elimination of slavery or something like that?
Yes. In Britain, I believe they eliminated slavery quite a bit earlier on, but it was still happening here in the mid-1800s, and it was Abraham Lincoln's signing of that proclamation that began the death, that sounded the death knell for slavery in our country, and that was, I think it was in January of 1863 that he signed that document.
When I was in Tennessee, in Nashville, and in Franklin, Tennessee, I actually was taken to the area in Franklin, and I think it was called the Battle of Franklin, for the Civil War. And it was very interesting finding out about that and still seeing so much of the segregation still intact. And I hate to say this, but I believe that slavery is still very much intact. It's just become more sophisticated. Mm. But I could really, really understand the earnestness of Lincoln, and especially reading all of this in your book about how he was really doing what he could to create some positive change in his country during that time.
Yes.
So when did you start writing this book? When did you start the project? I guess it was soon after that trip that you made.
Yes, I immediately started working on it, and it just basically took over my life. I ate, slept, drank, meditated, Lincoln Lindbergh in a past life yogi, and it was. I felt like I was riding a surfboard on a wave of energy and inspiration, because these connections just came to me over and over again. It was really quite fascinating. I mentioned the sense of guidance when I first started working on the book, and that guidance continued in some amazing ways. For instance, I would be reading something about Abraham Lincoln and then wondering if there was a connection in the life of Charles Lindbergh. And then I'd be in a bookstore or a library, and I would see a book just as spine title. And the title might not have been about either of those two men. But I would pick it off the shelf. I would just feel this impulse, pick it off the shelf and open the page. And right there on the page that I would open to would be the answer to the question I was looking for. And this didn't happen just once, but it happened over and over again. It's just really quite amazing. Just to share just a few of the connections that I found that I think were most interesting. Both men lost sons while centered in the public eye. Both men viewed their sons' remains after their sons had been dead for weeks. Both men fell in love with young women named Anne and got engaged to them when he was 26 and she was 22. There are also physical similarities in mention. Both had light blue eyes set deep in the sockets, and both men studied people as if from a distance. They also both tended to purse the lower lip and hunch their shoulders. These sort of physical traits, we carry them with us when we leave our physical body. Just because we die doesn't mean that we become totally transformed, you know. And
that's true.
Yes.
That's true. I can tell you from experience that that's
true. We just keep bringing it with us, all the good stuff and all the stuff that isn't so good, and then we get to work, move along a little further along on the path toward changing ourselves. The path of reincarnation is a very slow, long process. It starts. It's similar to evolution in nature. You know, it takes millions of years in nature for these very slow, gradual changes to take place. And the same is true for us spiritually, and that's why it takes so many lifetimes. When you think about it, how much time do we have to really focus on spiritual growth in a lifetime? If we really focus on that, we can do more. But even still, we have to put bread on the table. You know, we're going to try to, you know, meet who we're going to be with in that lifetime. If you have children, you have much less time to do much of anything. I've learned that recently. But every so often in your life, you'll get this sense, this feeling, a moment or two of epiphany where you say, oh, I finally understand something that I've wondered about all my life. When you have that moment, that is one of the reasons that we were born in that lifetime, was to have that clarity come to us in that moment. And then if you tie them together from lifetime to lifetime, they create this arc of spiritual growth. And at the beginning of the reincarnation cycle, we act like animals. But at the end of the cycle, we act like angels.
That's a very nice way of putting it, and that certainly is the ideal. And you know, being a multiple NDE, I can, you know, really attest to. There's a special Bavarian quote that's on my website: "At birth we cry; at death we understand why."
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, incarnating into the physical plane is painful and difficult, and leaving the physical body behind is glorious. And, and of course, I'm just speaking from my own experience. Now, you said something in your book that was very interesting, that what one is focused on and thinking about when one is getting ready to transition is what one will come into in the following life. Like, for example, let's say that I'm getting ready to transition, and I'm thinking about, well, I'd certainly like to do a lot more music than I've been granted doing in this life.
Yeah.
And then I reincarnate again, and the likelihood of doors opening up for me or to have opportunities to do more music might be intact.
Yeah.
So am I following you correctly?
Yes, that's something that Yogananda taught. By the way, the thing that you mentioned about coming into the lifetime and crying, Yogananda mentioned that too. He said that babies cry because they say, oh no, I'm back here on the physical plane where there's mosquitoes and disease and stuff like that, and I'm no longer in the astral plane, which can be so beautiful and free of all of that sort of thing, you know, worrying about unpaid bills and et cetera, et cetera. But you were asking about, that's something else too that Yogananda taught. He said that the thought that we carry with us when we leave our physical bodies is a very powerful one. And I found through my study and the work on this book, I learned a great deal about reincarnation while working on the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh. Things that, you know, when you read this book, I paired together a little anecdote or story from the life of Lincoln and a little anecdote or story from the life of Lindbergh. And then as you read them, you see the connections between the two. And it teaches what happens in our own lives, because these sort of things that happen in the lives of these famous people, it's the same for them as it is for us. It's
yes,
universal
it is.
Laws. And the thing about what I noticed was it's not only our last thought that we have right before we leave our bodies, and I learned this again through Lincoln Lindbergh, but also the thoughts you have the day you're dying, you know, hours before you die. For instance, Abraham Lincoln went for a carriage ride with Mary Todd from the White House. They went out, and during that ride, they spoke together, and Lincoln said, you know, I'm really looking forward, after the second term of office is over, to returning to Illinois and being back with our friends. And he was thinking just of how wonderful it would be to be back there and to have the little homestead they have, which is almost half a farm, where they had a cow in their barn in the back and animals around and so on, and just that sort of lifestyle. And it's interesting that a war took Abraham Lincoln away from that lifestyle that he was really reminiscing about and longing for at the end of his life. And then Charles Lindbergh, when he was a young man, World War I came about, and young men who were in school were allowed to leave school in order to help run the farm. And this is what Lindbergh got to do, and he said he loved it, and he was just diving into, you know, all the things, just plowing the land and helping to notch logs for a log cabin home for the pigs on the land, which is kind of interesting because Lincoln also helped his own father build two log cabin houses when he was growing up, and so on. And this desire of Lincoln's at the end of his life was fulfilled. Not only that, but he was able to return to Springfield. And in fact, one of the first jobs that Charles Lindbergh got was as an airmail pilot. And the part of the country that he flew over on pretty much a daily basis for many months was that part of America that Lincoln longed to see. So he was flying over Springfield, which was Lincoln's hometown. In fact, he stopped in there. He helped to create the first Springfield airmail airdrop there, and helped to decide what field to do it in and so on. And after Lindbergh flew the Atlantic and he was going on a tour of America, he was invited to every state in the Union, and he stopped in Springfield, and the reporters there said, in this Abraham Lincoln's hometown, what does it feel like to be here? His answer was, it feels like home.
That's tremendous. Now, excuse my ignorance, is that in Illinois?
Yes, that's right. That's in Illinois,
okay.
Which is, they have the motto, the land of Lincoln, there.
Okay. Yes, I remember reading that, and I thought, how interesting. And I think that, you know, to take this just a little bit further, that people will go to different places they've never been to in a current life, and I actually experienced that too, so I can use myself as an example. When I went to Hawaii and actually lived on the island of Kauai for a while, I just felt such a sense of home there.
Yes.
And I also feel a really strong connection with the Hawaiian language.
Yes.
And I thought, well, this is very interesting. And yet, I'm sorry to say, I don't really have any desire to go back because it's been so corrupted and it just breaks my heart.
Yes.
But yet, I will still have dreams about it. I will still be haunted by it.
Yes.
And another sort of interesting thing to say, getting back to when you were talking about our last thoughts before crossing over, and I was thinking about when I died of cancer, and you know, just so committed to the spiritual path and to helping to make the world a better place. And so how interesting that I was thinking about this as I went out, and the light source said that I had to come back to you know, share that life is eternal, that we do not cease to be when we leave our bodies behind. So even, I don't know, I sort of feel like I've had a few incarnations within an incarnation because of being clinically dead.
Yeah.
And how each time it has put me onto a path that corresponds with what I was thinking about. So that's really interesting to note that.
Yes, those sort of experiences can be very powerful, and for many people who have them, it's almost like it is two lifetimes, their life before they have the experience and then their life afterward. But you were mentioning how your experience in Hawaii made you feel this sense of familiarity. I had a similar sense when I went to England, of all places, being that you're from England originally. I was in between plane flights, and I was just, I was several floors up. I forget which of the two airports I was in, but I was flying from Europe to America. And I was just sitting there in the airport, just reading a book or something, and I heard somebody speaking over the sound system, and suddenly I began to just weep. Tears came to my eyes. I felt this deep sense that I was at home. And I decided at that point that sometime I should go back to England and just explore this. And this is something that I call past life pilgrimages, that everybody can do. If they feel that sort of connection, why not do this? I plotted out where, in fact, I'm writing a book on this. I plotted out where I wanted to go to, and I went for several weeks in England. And the one day that I went to Canterbury Cathedral, I felt was a day off because it was the only day that I went somewhere that I didn't feel a past life connection there. And it was just amazing. I went to a battlefield. In fact, I went to where the Battle of Hastings took place. Psychic told me that she saw me at that battle, and I thought it would be interesting just to visit there. So I was walking along this old stone wall with a friend I hadn't seen for years, and we were just talking and laughing and just having a great time. And all of a sudden, from one moment to the next, my mood just plummeted. It was like a 180-degree shift. Just immediate. And all of a sudden, instead of being so bright and happy, I was like that character in the Little Abner cartoon has a cloud hanging over his head. And I could hardly speak. And I turned to my friend and I said, would you mind if I took this tour of the battlefield by myself? And he said, yes, that would be fine. So when you take that tour of Battle Abbey, of where the Battle of Hastings took place, you're supposed to walk along this route in which they show you from this perspective, now this is what happened at this part of the battle and so on, and you could just take this route. I think it's a walk of about a half mile to a mile or something like that. And I just ignored all of that and just walked to the center of the this little hillside, which is now a sheep meadow, actually. And while these sheep were nudging me, I just sat there, and again, I wept for about 45 minutes. And I could see, I had never had an experience like this before or since, but I could see what I could only describe as a moving line drawing superimposed on the landscape of soldiers cutting at each other with swords, and horses rearing, and shields going up, and spears being thrust upward, and I saw somebody die before my eyes, and I just felt like I was releasing something I'd held on to for 1,000 years.
Wow.
And it was a very powerful experience, and it really changed something inside of me. I did become a different person through that experience. Now, again, I'm a very sensitive person. I go on pilgrimages a lot. I'm what I call a bit of a spiritual connoisseur of spiritual energies. And I feel different things in different places, but I never had experience like that before or since. And I really think that what that particular psychic just happened to hit it right on. But I had been at that battle, perhaps not understood what it was all about, and maybe left with some unfinished business there, but I was able to release it. And this is one of the things you can do if you go to places. If something negative happened there, you can go and release what happened so that you can be free of it and be able to move forward.
It's sort of like what people experience when they're hypnotized and they're made to look at a past event that they've been through either in this lifetime or in a previous lifetime, and then all of a sudden it's released and then they're fine again. So
yes,
that would really, you know, fit all of that. And
Yes, the way that I describe it, or the way that I visualize it, is if you're walking along a woodland path and you get hooked by this big thorn, and you're not aware of it, but it's really deep inside of you. But this thorn is at the end of a long trailer, a long vine. So you keep on going forward, and then at one point the vine becomes taut, and then suddenly the hook starts to pull at you and starts to hurt you. And if you were to keep going forward, you would just tear yourself and make yourself a worse wound than it already is. It might get infected, who knows. But if you were to go back along the direction in the way that you had come, just far enough to release it, then you can be free to move forward. And this is what I think the value of these sort of past life memories are all about. People will get them if they do regressions, like you mentioned, but some people get them spontaneously. And just like I did in that airport or you did in Hawaii, you know, you just happen to be somewhere you've never been before. You see a building or you see someone or something triggers it, and suddenly you're thrown back 100,000, who knows how long ago. And there's a reason for that. Every time it comes up, there's something connected between that event and that situation and what's going on in our lives right now. And that's why it's come up, and it's helpful for us to go into it again, just enough to be able to release that thorn, and then we can release it freely, completely, and be able to move forward on all sorts of levels of our lives.
That's a beautiful metaphor you just used as well. Now, have you got, let's talk about this a bit, because there's so many ways that people can actually glean these insights about their past lives through dreams, through regressions, through visiting different places. What are some of the things that you might want to suggest to our listeners about this?
Yes, there's one thing actually in particular that I recommend above all of the things. If you're interested in learning more about your past lives, the best way to go about it is to learn to meditate. In meditation, you realize that you're a spirit that's untouched by the cycles of birth and death. And in fact, as a yogi, I follow that tradition. There's an ancient scripture called the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And in that scripture, Patanjali mentions various spiritual powers that come to yogis and how they're brought about. And each of the spiritual abilities is connected to having perfected the spiritual quality. For instance, once you perfect nonviolence, you can go stand before a raging tiger and they will calm down and be like a pussycat in your presence. If you really perfect that quality, the universe sort of conforms to it. If you perfect truthfulness, your words get great power, and everything you say has to come true because you're so in tune with truth. And these are amazing abilities that some yogis develop, but actually that we can all develop if we perfect these qualities, because it's not limited to yoga. These are universal spiritual principles. But the one that's related to past lives, Patanjali said that the knowledge of past lives comes to us when we have perfected the ability to not accept He said non-acceptance, and some people have said that means non-acceptance of gifts, but there's no connection between not accepting a gift and knowing your past lives. What he meant was to not accept that this physical body and this personality is the final statement on who and what you are. Not accept that this moment in time is your whole existence, is your being. Rather that you accept that you are a spirit that is beyond the physical body, beyond this personality, which can express parts of your spirit, but could never completely express all of it. And so once in meditation, if you practice meditation, you go within and you leave the physical world behind, all the sounds, all the sights, smells, and so on, and just switch off, as Yogananda used to say, switch off the sense telephones one by one.
Yes, yes.
And then when you get into that state of spirit and you realize this is who and what I am, this joy and this peace and this love, and it's everything that I've ever sought for and it's all inside of me, then when you really have that sense of deep realization, you come back to the, you know, into the physical consciousness and you say, this is just a temporary manifestation. Well, once you can pull back that far and see that about this life, then you can pull back and see, oh, I also played the role of that life, as Shakespeare said. You know, I lived that life and I played that role on the stage of the world and so on, and learned these lessons, but none of them were the final word on who and what I am.
And also, as being a near-death experiencer, mm-hmm. And the NDE community, so many people have, you know, through their experiences, myself included, validated what you're saying, because when we do cross over and then realize, wow, we're still conscious, we still exist, we still have got our selfhood,
yes.
Only the body is gone, you know, it's yes. it's just a shell, it's a piece of clothing that people who are traveling in space need a spacesuit, or we need an earth suit whilst we're walking about on this plane, but it's got nothing to do with who we are.
Yes, Yogananda likened it to just putting on a jacket. He said just putting on the physical form and also the personality. He said whenever he has to do that, it's like putting on a heavy overcoat on a hot day. It's kind of uncomfortable. He says, but after a while, you sort of get used to it, you know, and that was his way of describing it.
Well, I think we might have a call. Have we got a caller?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hi.
Who are we speaking to?
My name is Ramneek.
Well, hello. And go ahead, and what is your question or comment, Ramneek?
Well, I don't know. I think I was just calling for more of a personal question for my, like, spiritual transformation that I'm going through at the moment.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess I have had a near-death experience, sort of, like, when I was, like, 16, and I'm going through a lot of spiritual stuff right now. So, not sure. I guess I was calling about that.
Okay, so what were you wanting to know? What specifically did you want to inquire about? Are you trying to sort out whether you did have a near-death experience?
Yeah, my phone is I can't hear you very well, so...
Okay.
Okay, I'm just trying. I think I did, like, when I was 16. I was brought to the hospital, and they had to revive me and stuff. And ever since then, I guess, I've always been... lately, I think I've been more on a spiritual quest, I guess. It's hard to say.
Do you have any memories of your experience or no?
My near death?
Yes.
No, I don't.
Okay. Sometimes that is the case when people have a near death experience. They will not remember it, and then at a certain time, all of a sudden, you will gain total recall of your experience.
Okay.
And I think that Richard has got a very good idea that if you start to meditate, this will also help you to remember what you went through in your near-death experience. Would that make sense to you, Richard? And do you have some advice about this?
Yes. I think if you were to start to meditate on a daily basis, and it helps if you do it at the same time every day because it helps to develop the habit of it, it will help you in your desire to grow spiritually especially, but it will also help to remind you of perhaps some of the details of the experience that you had, because when you go inside in meditation and when we leave our physical bodies, we are going within, we're going deep within and having these experiences. They're all internal experiences. And when we meditate, it's pretty much the same thing. So you're in the same arena, you're in the same sphere of life, and it's possible that some of those memories may return to you through meditation, or as Juliet says, they may return otherwise as well, and perhaps in your dreams.
Yeah. And I was also wondering, because lately I've been feeling very tired and I'm feeling a lot of like tingling in my body and just feeling very strange. And I was just wondering if you guys knew anything about that or if you could tell me anything about that. Like I feel just, not sure.
Do you want to comment, Richard?
You know, this is beyond my usual studies and my expertise. I wouldn't be able to answer because it sounds like if it is connected, it would be directly with near-death experiences, and my focus has been more on past lives and reincarnation. Have you had any... do you have any knowledge of what she is talking about, Julia?
Well, actually, I do, and I wanted to offer you the opportunity to say something as well. I've also been feeling a bit of this sort of weariness, and the feeling there is a huge quickening going on right now, which is forcing people to become their more authentic selves. Now, what is interesting is that having a near-death or similar spiritually transformative experience, even doing meditation, will trigger this quickening, this awakening in a huge way, too. And it sort of propels you forward onto a path of seeking to understand things on a much, much deeper level. Now, one thing I do want to say about this is it's important not to give in to fear, because I really don't feel that something threatening is happening to you, but actually it's an opportunity for you to go more inward, doing a lot of what I would call soul searching.
Yeah.
And listening to your intuition is very important. Pay attention as you're going about your day and what might kind of jump out at you or grab your attention and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Also listen to your dreams, because this is a time, again, I don't think anybody is exempt from this, going through a tremendous transformation and transitioning right now. Mm-hmm. Some people are indeed transitioning to the other side. Some people are transitioning within this lifetime, but making a huge, huge change so that it's almost like starting a new life. You're definitely starting a new chapter. Allow yourself rest, because that's also an opportunity for you to tap into the deeper stratum of your being rather than being distracted by what you're experiencing in the five-sensory world. Does this make sense to you?
Yeah, it really does.
Okay.
I'm sorry. One other thing I'd like to mention, just to add to what you're saying, Juliet, is that when you start to work on yourself spiritually and you have this near-death experience, you're going more into a world of energy. So if you're starting to experience energies in your body that you have never experienced before, part of this may be part of that process, just becoming aware of yourself more as an energy being, which is connected with the astral world, because the world that we enter when we go into a near-death experience, the world that we enter when we leave our physical bodies, is a world of energy. and you may become more aware of the energy in your body. And as Juliet says, don't worry about that. This is actually a good sign. It may come up in ways that are unusual, in ways that you have never experienced before. But if you're open to it and you just keep your focus on a positive state of mind, often these energies are very enjoyable and are, in fact, part of the process of spiritual development in the spiritual science of yoga.
That's a great point, Richard. I really thank you for that. And I hope this helps you and anybody else who's listening. Whilst we're at it, Richard, why don't you share with our listeners your website so that people can go to your website?
Yes, certainly. The book is called Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh, and I have a special offer available on my website for those who are interested. If you'll go to LincolnReincarnation.com, you'll be able to see everything related to that offer. There's an offer for a free past life reading through numerology, an offer also for a free past life consultation with myself. These are all parts of the offer that are on my website.
Are you guys able to tell me about my past life, or is that possible? Or
actually, I don't do past life readings per se. I will do consultations for those who've had past life experiences and are wondering how to reconcile it with what's going on in their lives right now, how it connects, how they can move forward from going through the experience. Also, I can help for those who would like to learn, as we were talking about, to meditate, to be able to tune into their past lives. But I don't do actually past life reading.
I've actually spoken to a clairvoyant, and she actually told me a bit, but I was just curious about more. And she told me that I'm an empath, and then I'll be going through a huge change, and I am, and I'm just curious about stuff.
Well, I also work with that kind of thing as well, because I am a clairvoyant and a medium. And so what I'd like to encourage you to do is to visit Richard's website that he just gave out. Well, you've got another website, don't you, Richard? Or is this the main
actually, it's a different web address, but it's the same website. And the easiest way to get there is LincolnReincarnation.com.
Okay, LincolnReincarnation.com. And then my website is towardthelight.org. So you're welcome to check that out, because I also do consultations. So I think between us and anybody else that you might cross paths with, that you will find answers. Being open is very important, and being in earnest, and it certainly sounds like you are. So you're in a good way. You're going to do really, really well.
Right.
And thank you so much for the call.
All
I appreciate that.
All right, thank you. Bye.
All right, God bless. All right, Richard, that was very nice.
Yes.
And again, with the near-death experiences, and I really appreciate your pointing out how we do become aware of the fact that we are energy. Indeed,
yes.
We are. And in fact, there is a tremendous upsurge of energy at the moment of one's crossing over.
Yes.
So, and I also experience that through meditation and through spiritually transformative experiences, again, because I think we're more aware of the fact that we are energy. The soul
yes.
is energy.
You know, relating this to, again, to the study that I made, it might be interesting to go through the last moments of Abraham Lincoln's life and to look at it from this perspective, if you will, of near-death experiences, the perspective of the higher teachings of yoga, to see what happened on that level. Because especially here in America, in the States, in the colonies, if you will, we have a there's a stigma in our culture. There was a wounding of America on some level when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. And I think it really is a healing thing for us as a nation, just to look at it from this spiritual perspective, because when you do, it's a very different story. So if you wouldn't mind, maybe I'll take just a few minutes to go through that very
Please.
Briefly.
Please, absolutely.
Okay, so Abraham Lincoln attended a play called Our American Cousin in a theater called Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C., and most people know that that's where he was assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. So what happened to his spirit through this experience? Well, we know that Booth came from behind and shot Lincoln right behind his ear, which is kind of interesting because that means that one of the last sounds Lincoln would have heard would have been a gunshot right behind his ear. And Charles Lindbergh, though a very courageous man, had this strange, very strong fear of gunfire, of gunshots. And he actually had to kind of fight to overcome that in his life. But anyway, so we were talking about Lincoln, and right when this assassination occurred and he was shot from behind, he wasn't totally aware that it was happening. It was a bit of a surprise to him, although there is evidence that he did hear something behind him, so he just started to turn his head a little, and then he was shot. And he never regained consciousness after that. But what happens when we leave our bodies suddenly? Well, one of the great... example of what happens that we see in the movie Ghost, where somebody was shot and then you see him still running along the same street and he's not aware that he has left his physical body. It's often the case when we leave that suddenly and we're not even aware that it happened, that our spirits end up hanging around at least for a little while. So we can easily see that this sort of situation would have occurred where Abraham Lincoln's spirit would have popped out of his body and he would still have been around and would still have been experiencing things that were going around him, even though his physical body was in a coma that which he never awoke from. In fact, sometimes when people are like in an automobile accident, sometimes their spirits will pop them out of their body even before the accident happens.
Exactly.
Yes, there have been occasions of that, and then they would be floating above and watching what is going on. So we can visualize Lincoln's spirit after this, he had been shot, just around, either floating up above or around, just watching as everyone crowded around him, and the doctors came, and so on. Yogananda said that we talked earlier about the five sense telephones. He said when we leave our physical body, the last sense to leave is a sense of hearing. So it's a very important, yes, especially if you go to somebody who's in the hospital and there's a chance they might live or if there's a chance they might not. Be careful of what you say, because if they hear you say, well, he's gone or she's gone or something like that, they could say, okay, well, I guess there's no hope, and then they might just leave, whereas otherwise they might stay around for a while.
Well, actually, a lot of NDEs have said, no, I'm here, can't you see me? You know,
yes, yes.
There's been lots of accounts of that. And another interesting thing to validate what you're saying, if people are familiar, if you're familiar with the book called Return from Tomorrow by George Ritchie. Now, that was a very detailed near-death experience.
Yes.
And he was just going along and having had no idea that he died in the barracks. And he was still looking for the train to go to Richmond, Virginia, from wherever he was in Texas.
Yes.
And, of course, I didn't know I was, quote, dead either. And the funny thing with me is that I was just going all over the place and traveling into deep space.
Mm-hmm.
But what's so interesting is that it was so natural to me. I didn't think, oh, how strange is this? Where am I? It was just so natural to me. But I think in general, which may be a little bit more unique, is that I have had a tendency to be throughout this entire incarnation multidimensional anyway.
Yes.
So I'm sort of here on the earth plane part of the time, but much of the time I'm not even hanging out in my body, and I get teased about it, but that's all right.
Yes, yes. So, no, actually, you know, Lincoln was that way himself. Sometimes he would leave his physical body and he would go into spontaneous meditations. And one time when he was in Springfield, he felt this pain on his nose, and he came out of one of these states to see Mary Todd standing in front of him with a piece of firewood, which she had just whacked him on the nose. And she was saying, I'm tired of talking to you, and you're not responding. I want you to listen to what I say. And so he mumbled an apology and washed his nose off. But But yes. So what you're talking about would have been to something that Lincoln would have experienced, because for all of us, especially as we grow spiritually, the spiritual world, the energy world, is actually very familiar to us. We've been there many times. We've left our other bodies many, many times. It's not that unusual for us. We've gone through it before there. And so for Lincoln, too, because according to Yogananda, he was an advanced soul, and we can see that when we look at his life. He would have been aware enough to have been around. So he would have followed as his body was carried from Ford's Theater to the building across the street, which is called the Peterson House. And his body was kept there for a number of hours through the night and into the early morning hours when he took his last breath. He would have heard, again, as the sense of hearing is the last to leave you, he would have heard perhaps his wife's cries to him. He would have heard his friends talking about him. He might have been aware there was one doctor who just kept holding his hand throughout the whole experience, and he might have been aware of some of the pressure of that as that physical connection was slowly removed. And then at some point he would have just started to fade away from his body and start to go inward, inside. And when that happens, you go through an experience which many people know about from near-death experiences of going through a tunnel. And the way that the yogis say that this is entering what they call the astral spine, which is the not the physical body with the bones and the back, but more an energy flow in the very center of your being. And when you leave your physical body, all of your energy body is intact, including this astral spine. And once it's time for you to leave the physical world, because the astral world, the energy world, intersects it, but it's much larger, and there are areas to go that are not connected with the physical universe. And it's like the physical world is a basket, and the astral world is like this huge hot air balloon, so you could get the idea of the size of it.
Yeah.
And So for Lincoln, he would at some point have been drawn into that deep spine and going through it just like a tunnel and coming through it to the very end of it and going into the light, which is the light at the Christ Center between the two eyebrows. And at that point, he would have been greeted by some high soul. It might have been Christ. It might have been someone he connected with who was a great, great spiritual soul, a great saint, some angel or so on, to help to usher him into the other world. And he might also have been greeted, too, by others who have passed on before him who wanted to greet him, to welcome him into the astral world. And then he would have been able to enjoy the astral world, because he was a man who did so many good things in his life. He would have gravitated naturally to a high astral plane, because it's just natural for us. If we're somebody who likes to argue, you know, we wouldn't want to hang around with angels playing harps and so on. It would be hell for people like that who just like to bicker and argue and, you know, fight with other people. They get attracted to places where they can do that. And for someone like Lincoln, he would have been drawn to a place of light and joy. He would have heard beautiful sounds, like great symphonies of beautiful music, and the colors would have been tremendous, just flying over these beautiful landscapes and feeling this great joy inside. Until about 30-some-odd years later, according to Yogananda, he would have felt this call, this pull, back into the physical world, and he would have been pulled into the womb of a woman who is in the northern part of America, and eventually would have been born in Detroit as Charles Lindbergh. And this is the description of Lincoln's experience, leaving his physical body and going into the astral world and then being reborn.
One thing that I would like to say, though, is that, you know, it's become quite a stereotype of this tunnel. But to be honest, the majority of near-death experiences, including myself, do not experience the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And with the research that I've done, and this would be interesting to continue to research to get a better understanding of it, is that it would appear that people who have had more sudden experiences, like, for example, a motor car accident or having been shot or a fall or something like that, they might be more inclined to experience the tunnel. But I never experienced the tunnel. And PMH Atwater, who's a foremost researcher and a near-death experiencer as well, has pointed out that fewer than 5% of NDEers actually experience the tunnel. That doesn't mean that there isn't still this sort of spine that you're talking about, but the tunnel is something else, and it is. This would be a good thing to dig more into because it is something that, you know, a number of people do describe, but a lot of us don't have that experience.
Yes, so, yes, what we're doing here is just describing how the experience could have well have gone. With somebody who is very, who had the experience that Lincoln had, I believe that he would have gone through that experience. But it might have been somewhat different, or like you say, for various people, sometimes they experience parts and different parts of the overall experience when they leave their physical bodies. But there's a general sense of how these things go, and that was what I was trying to share with people, a different way of looking at Lincoln's death.
Well, that's really wonderful, and I've got to say that this, we have already come to the end of our time for this week. It has been so wonderful having you with us. We've been speaking with Mr. Richard, or Reverend Richard Salva, and the website again is Lincoln, what is that, LincolnReincarnation.com?
Yes, that's right. And I want to say also, it's just been I want to thank you for having me on your show. It's just been a great pleasure to be speaking with you about these subjects.
Well, you are so welcome. Now, I want to remind everyone, it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please join us next week for another transmission of Toward the Light, Leaning Back to the Source. Remember, only love prevails. Blessings and light. We will talk to you next week. Cheerio for now. Still chilled, I relax.